It just told me. Run! Tyson darted to one side, but the snake used its head like a club and knocked him off his feet. No! Grover yelled. But before Tyson could regain his balance, the snake wrapped around him and started to squeeze. Tyson strained, pushing with all his immense strength, but the snake squeezed tighter. Grover frantically hit the snake with his reed pipes, but he might as well have been banging on a stone wall. The whole room shook as the snake flexed its muscles, shuddering to overcome Tyson's strength. Grover began to play with pipes, and stalactites rained down from the ceiling. The whole cave seemed about to collapse. I woke with Annabeth shaking my shoulder. Percy, wake up. Tyson's in trouble, I said. We have to help him. First things first, she said. Earthquake! Sure enough, the room was rumbling. Rachel! I yelled. Her eyes opened instantly. She grabbed her pack, and the three of us ran. We were almost to the far tunnel when a column next to us groaned and buckled. We kept going as 100 tons of marble crashed down behind us. We made it to the corridor and turned just in time to see the other columns toppling. A cloud of white dust billowed over us, and we kept running. You know what? Annabeth said. I like this way, after all. It wasn't long before we saw light up ahead, like regular electric lighting. There, Rachel said. We followed her into a stainless steel hallway, like I imagined they'd have on a space station or something. Fluorescent lights glowed from the ceiling. The floor was a metal grate. I was so used to being in the darkness that I had to squint. Annabeth and Rachel both looked pale in the harsh illumination. This way, Rachel said, beginning to run. We're close. This is so wrong, Annabeth said. The workshop should be in the oldest section of the maze. This can't... She faltered because we'd arrived at a set of metal double doors. Inscribed in the steel, at eye level, was a large blue Greek delta.
We're here, Rachel announced. Daedalus's workshop.
Annabeth pressed the symbol on the doors, and they hissed open. So much for ancient architecture, I said. Annabeth scowled. Together we walked inside. The first thing that struck me was the daylight, blazing sun coming through giant windows. Not the kind of thing you'd expect in the heart of a dungeon. The workshop was like an artist's studio, with 30-foot ceilings and industrial lighting, polished stone floors, and workbenches along with windows. A spiral staircase led up to a second-story loft. Half a dozen easels displayed hand-drawn diagrams for buildings and machines that looked like Leonardo da Vinci sketches. Several laptop computers were scattered around on the tables. Glass jars of green oil, Greek fire, lined one shelf. There were inventions, too. Weird metal machines I couldn't make sense of. One was a bronze chair with a bunch of electrical wires attached to it, like some kind of torture device. In another corner stood a giant metal egg about the size of a man. There was a grandfather clock that appeared to be made entirely of glass, so you could see all the gears turning, and hanging on the wall were several sets of bronze and silver wings.
De Immortalis, Annabeth muttered.
She ran to the nearest easel and looked at the sketch.
He's a genius. Look at the curves on this building.
And an artist, Rachel said in amazement. These wings are amazing. The wings looked more advanced than the ones I'd seen in my dreams. The feathers were more tightly interwoven. Instead of wax seals, self-adhesive strips ran down the sides. I kept my hand on Riptide. Apparently, Daedalus was not at home, but the workshop looked like it had been recently used. The laptops were running their screensavers. A half-eaten blueberry muffin and a coffee cup sat on a workbench. I walked to the window. The view outside was amazing. I recognized the Rocky Mountains in the distance. We were high up in the foothills, at least 500 feet, and down below, a valley spread out, filled with a tumbled collection of red mesas
and boulders and spires of stone. It looked like some huge kid had been building a toy city with skyscraper-sized blocks and then decided to knock it over. "Where are we?" I wondered.
"Colorado Springs," a voice said behind us. "The Garden of the Gods."
Standing on the spiral staircase above us, with his weapon drawn, was our missing swordmaster, Quintus.
"You!"
Annabeth said. "What have you done with Daedalus?" Quintus smiled faintly.
"Trust me, my dear. You don't want to meet him."
"Look, Mr. Traitor," she growled. "I didn't fight a dragon woman and a three-bodied man and a psychotic sphinx to see you. Now where is Daedalus?"
Quintus came down the stairs, holding his sword at his side. He was dressed in jeans and boots and his counselor's t-shirt from Camp Half-Blood, which seemed like an insult now that we knew he was a spy. I didn't know if I could beat him in a sword fight. He was pretty good, but I figured I would have to try.
"You think I'm an agent of Kronos," he said, "that I work for Luke."
"Well, duh," said Annabeth.
"You're an intelligent girl," he said, "but you're wrong. I work only for myself."
"Luke mentioned you," I said. "Garion knew about you, too. You've been to his ranch."
"Of course," he said. "I've been almost everywhere, even here."
He walked past me like I was no threat at all and stood by the window.
"The view changes from day to day," he mused. "It's always some place high up. Yesterday it was from a skyscraper overlooking Manhattan. The day before that, there was a beautiful view of Lake Michigan. But it keeps coming back to the Garden of the Gods. I think the Labyrinth likes it here. A fitting name, I suppose."
"You've been here before," I said.
"Oh, yes."
"That's an illusion out there?" I asked. "A projection or something?"
"No," Rachel murmured. "It's real. We're really in Colorado."
Quintus regarded her.
"You have clear vision, don't you? You remind me of another mortal girl I once knew. Another princess who came to grief."
"Enough games," I said. "What have you done with Daedalus?" Quintus stared at me.
"My boy, you need lessons from your friend on seeing clearly. I am Daedalus."
There were lots of answers I might have given from "I knew that," to "liar," to "yeah, right, and I'm Zeus." The only thing I could think to say was, "But you're not an inventor. You're a swordsman."
"I am both," Quintus said, "and an architect, and a scholar. I also play basketball pretty well for a guy who didn't start until he was 2,000 years old. A real artist must be good at many things."
"That's true," Rachel said. "Like, I could paint with my feet as well as my hands."
"You see," Quintus said, "a girl of many talents."
"But you don't even look like Daedalus," I protested. "I saw him in a dream and..." Suddenly a horrible thought dawned on me.
"Yes," Quintus said, "you finally guessed the truth."
"You're an automaton. You made yourself a new body."
"Percy," Annabeth said uneasily, "that's not possible. That can't be an automaton."
Quintus chuckled.
"Do you know what Quintus means, my dear?"
"The fifth in Latin, but..."
"This is my fifth body."
The swordsman held out his forearm. He pressed his elbow, and part of his wrist popped open, a rectangular hatch in his skin. Underneath, bronze gears whirred. Wires glowed.
"That's amazing," Rachel said.
"That's weird," I said.
"You found a way to transfer your animus into a machine?"
Annabeth said.
"That's not natural."
"Oh, I assure you, my dear, it's still me. I'm still very much Daedalus. Our mother, Athena, makes sure I never forget that.
He tugged back the collar of his shirt. At the base of his neck was the mark I'd seen before, the dark shape of a bird grafted to his skin.
A murderer's brand, Annabeth said.
For your nephew Perdix, I guessed, the boy you pushed off the tower. Quintus's face darkened.
I did not push him, I simply...
Made him lose his balance, I said. Let him die. Quintus gazed out the windows at the purple mountains.
I regret what I did, Percy. I was angry and bitter, but I cannot take it back, and Athena never lets me forget. As Perdix died, she turned him into a small bird, a partridge. She branded the bird's shape on my neck as a reminder. No matter what body I take, the brand appears on my skin.
I looked into his eyes, and I realized he was the same man I'd seen in my dreams. His face might be totally different, but the same soul was in there, the same intelligence in all the sadness.
You really are Daedalus, I decided. But why did you come to the camp? Why spy on us?
To see if your camp was worth saving. Luke had given me one story. I preferred to come to my own conclusions.
So you have talked to Luke?
Oh, yes, several times. He is quite persuasive.
But now you've seen the camp, Annabeth persisted. So you know we need your help. You can't let Luke through the maze.
Daedalus set his sword on the workbench.
The maze is no longer mine to control, Annabeth. I created it, yes. In fact, it is tied to my life force. But I have allowed it to live and grow on its own. That is the price I paid for privacy.
Privacy from what?
The gods, he said. And death. I have been alive for 2 millennia, my dear, hiding from death.
But how can you hide from Hades? I asked. I mean, Hades has the Furies.
They do not know everything, he said, or see everything. You have encountered them, Percy. You know this is true. A clever man can hide quite a long time, and I have buried myself very deep. Only my greatest enemy has kept after me, and even him I have thwarted.
You mean Minos? I said. Daedalus nodded.
He hunts for me relentlessly. Now that he is a judge of the dead, he would like nothing better than for me to come before him so he can punish me for my crimes. After the daughters of Cocalus killed him, Minos's ghost began torturing me in my dreams. He promised that he would hunt me down. I did the only thing I could. I retreated from the world completely. I descended into my labyrinth. I decided this would be my ultimate accomplishment. I would cheat death.
And you did, Annabeth marveled. For 2,000 years.
She sounded kind of impressed, despite the horrible things Daedalus had done. Just then, a loud bark echoed from the corridor. I heard the ba-bump, ba-bump, ba-bump of huge paws, and Mrs. O'Leary bounded into the workshop. She licked my face once, then almost knocked Daedalus over with an enthusiastic leap.
There is my old friend,
Daedalus said, scratching Mrs. O'Leary behind the ears.
My only companion all these long, lonely years.
You let her save me, I said. That whistle actually worked.
Daedalus nodded.
Of course it did, Percy. You have a good heart, and I knew Mrs. O'Leary liked you. I wanted to help you. Perhaps I felt guilty as well.
Guilty about what?
That your quest would be in vain.
What? Annabeth said. But you can still help us. You have to. Give us Ariadne's string so Luke can't get it.
Yes, the string. I told Luke that the eyes of a clear-sighted mortal are the best guide, but he did not trust me. He was so focused on the idea of a magic item, and the string works. It's not as accurate as your mortal friend here, perhaps, but good enough, good enough.
Where is it? Annabeth said.
With Luke, Daedalus said sadly. I'm sorry, my dear, but you are several hours too late.
With a chill, I realized why Luke had been in such a good mood in the arena. He'd already gotten the string from Daedalus. His only obstacle had been the arena master, and I'd taken care of that for him by killing Antaeus.
Kronos promised me freedom, Quintus said. Once Hades is overthrown, he will set me over the underworld. I will reclaim my son Icarus. I will make things right with poor young Perdix. I will see Minos's soul cast into Tartarus, where it cannot bother me again. And I will no longer have to run from death.
That's your brilliant idea? Annabeth yelled. You're going to let Luke destroy our camp, kill hundreds of demigods, and then attack Olympus? You're going to bring down the entire world so you can get what you want?
Your cause is doomed, my dear. I saw that as soon as I began to work at your camp. There is no way you can hold back the might of Kronos.
That's not true, she cried.
I am doing what I must, my dear. The offer was too sweet to refuse. I'm sorry.
Annabeth pushed over an easel, architectural drawings scattered across the floor. I used to respect you. You are my hero. You built amazing things. You solved problems. Now, I don't know what you are. Children of Athena are supposed to be wise, not just clever. Maybe you are just a machine. You should have died 2,000 years ago. Instead of getting mad, Daedalus hung his head.
You should go warn your camp. Now that Luke has the string...
Suddenly, Mrs. O'Leary pricked up her ears. Someone's coming, Rachel warned. The doors of the workshop burst open, and Nico was pushed inside, his hands in chains. Then Kelly and two Lystragonians marched in behind him, followed by the ghost of Minos. He looked almost solid now, a pale bearded king with cold eyes and tendrils of mist coiling off his robes. He fixed his gaze on Daedalus.
There you are, my old friend.
Daedalus's jaw clenched. He looked at Kelly.
What is the meaning of this?
Luke sends his compliments, Kelly said. He thought you might like to see your old employer, Minos.
This was not part of our agreement, Daedalus said.
No, indeed, Kelly said. But we already have what we want from you, and we have other agreements to honor. Minos required something else from us in order to turn over this fine young demigod. She ran a finger under Nico's chin. He'll be quite useful, and all Minos asked in return was your head, old man. Daedalus paled.
Treachery.
Get used to it, Kelly said. Nico, I said, are you okay? He nodded morosely. I'm sorry, Percy. Minos told me you were in danger. He convinced me to go back into the maze. You were trying to help us? I was tricked, he said. He tricked all of us. I glared at Kelly. Where's Luke? Why isn't he here? The she-demon smiled like we were sharing a private joke. Luke is busy. He's preparing for the assault. But don't worry, we have more friends on the way. And in the meantime, I think I'll have a wonderful snack. Her hands changed to claws. Her hair burst into flame, and her legs turned to their true form. One donkey leg, one bronze. Percy, Rachel whispered, the wings, do you think? Get them, I said. I'll try to buy you some time.
And with that, all Hades broke loose. Annabeth and I charged at Kelly. The giants came right at Daedalus, but Mrs. O'Leary leaped to his defense. Nico got pushed to the ground and struggled with his chains while the spirit of Minos wailed,
"Kill the inventor! Kill him!"
Rachel grabbed the wings off the wall. Nobody paid her any attention. Kelly slashed at Annabeth. I tried to get to her, but the demon was quick and deadly. She turned over tables, smashed inventions, and wouldn't let us get close. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Mrs. O'Leary chomp her fangs into a giant's arm. He wailed in pain and flung her around, trying to shake her. Daedalus grabbed for his sword, but the second giant smashed the workbench with his fist, and the sword went flying. A clay jar of Greek fire broke on the floor and began to burn, green flame spreading quickly.
"To me," Minos cried, "spirits of the dead."
He raised his ghostly hands and the air began to hum.
"No,"
Nico cried. He was on his feet now. He'd somehow managed to remove his shackles.
"You do not control me, young fool," Minos sneered. "All this time I have been controlling you, a soul for a soul, yes. But it is not your sister who will return from the dead. It is I, as soon as I slay the inventor."
Spirits began to appear around Minos, shimmering forms that slowly multiplied, solidifying into Cretan soldiers.
"I am the son of Hades," Nico insisted. "Be gone!"
Minos laughed.
"You have no power over me. I am the Lord of Spirits, the Ghost King."
"No,"
Nico drew his sword.
"I am."
He stabbed his black blade into the floor, and it cleaved through the stone like butter.
"Never!"
Minos's form rippled.
"I will not!"
The ground rumbled. The windows cracked and shattered to pieces, letting in a blast of fresh air. A fissure opened in the stone floor of the workshop, and Minos and all his spirits were sucked into the void with a horrible wail. The bad news? The fight was still going on all around us, and I let myself get distracted. Kelly pounced at me so fast, I had no time to defend myself. My sword skittered away, and I hit my head hard on a work table as I fell. My eyesight went fuzzy. I couldn't raise my arms. Kelly laughed.
"You will taste wonderful."
She bared her fangs. Then suddenly her body went rigid. Her red eyes widened. She gasped.
"No, school, spirit."
And Annabeth took her knife out of the Empusa's back. With an awful screech, Kelly dissolved into yellow vapor. Annabeth helped me up. I still felt dizzy, but we had no time to lose. Mrs. O'Leary and Daedalus were still locked in combat with the giants, and I could hear shouting in the tunnel. More monsters were coming toward the workshop.
"We have to help Daedalus," I said.
"No time," Rachel said. "Too many coming." She'd already fitted herself with wings and was working on Nico, who looked pale and sweaty from his struggle with Minos. The wings grafted instantly to his back and arms.
"Now you,"
she told me. In seconds, Nico, Annabeth, Rachel, and I had fitted ourselves with coppery wings. Already I could feel myself being lifted by the wind coming through the window. Greek fire was burning the tables and furniture, spreading up the circular stairs.
"Daedalus!"
I yelled.
"Come on!"
He was cut in 100 places, but he was bleeding golden oil instead of blood. He'd found his sword and was using part of a smashed table as a shield against the giants.
"I won't leave Mrs. O'Leary," he said. "Go!"
There was no time to argue. Even if we stayed, I wasn't sure we could help.
"None of us know how to fly,"
Nico protested.
"Great time to find out,"
I said. And together, the four of us jumped out the window into open sky. Chapter 16. I Open a Coffin. Jumping out a window 500 feet above ground is not usually my idea of fun, especially when I'm wearing bronze wings and flapping my arms like a duck. I plummeted toward the valley
and the red rocks below. I was pretty sure I was going to become a grease spot in the Garden of the Gods, as Annabeth yelled from somewhere above me, "Spread your arms! Keep them extended!" The small part of my brain that wasn't engulfed in panic heard her, and my arms responded. As soon as I spread them out, the wings stiffened, caught the wind, and my descent slowed. I soared downward, but at a controlled angle, like a kite in a dive. Experimentally, I flapped my arms once. I arced into the sky, the wind whistling in my ears.
"Yeah!"
I yelled. The feeling was unbelievable. After getting the hang of it, I felt like the wings were part of my body. I could soar and swoop and dive anywhere I wanted to. I turned and saw my friends, Rachel, Annabeth, and Nico, spiraling above me, glinting in the sunlight. Behind them, smoke billowed from the windows of Daedalus's workshop.
"Land!" Annabeth yelled. "These wings won't last forever."
"How long?" Rachel cried.
"I don't want to find out," Annabeth said.
We swooped down toward the Garden of the Gods. I did a complete circle around one of the rock spires and freaked out a couple of climbers. Then the four of us soared across the valley, over a road, and landed on the terrace of the visitor center. It was late afternoon, and the place looked pretty empty, but we ripped off our wings as quickly as we could. Looking at them, I could see Annabeth was right. The self-adhesive seals that bound the wings to our backs were already melting, and we were shedding bronze feathers. It seemed a shame, but we couldn't fix them, and couldn't leave them around for the mortals, so we stuffed the wings into the trash bin outside the cafeteria. I used the tourist binocular camera to look up at the hill where Daedalus's workshop had been, but it had vanished. No more smoke, no broken windows, just the side of a hill.
"The workshop moved," Annabeth guessed. "There's no telling where."
"So what do we do now?" I asked. "How do we get back in the maze?" Annabeth gazed at the summit of Pike's Peak in the distance.
"Maybe we can't. If Daedalus died, he said his life force was tied to the labyrinth. The whole thing might have been destroyed. Maybe that will stop Luke's invasion."
I thought about Grover and Tyson, still down there somewhere. And Daedalus, even though he'd done some terrible things and put everybody I cared about at risk, it still seemed like a pretty horrible way to die.
"No," Nico said. "He isn't dead."
"How can you be sure?" I asked.
"I know when people die. It's this feeling I get, like a buzzing in my ears."
"What about Tyson and Grover, then?"
Nico shook his head. "That's harder. They're not humans or half-bloods. They don't have mortal souls." "We have to get into town," Annabeth decided. "Our chances will be better of finding an entrance to the labyrinth. We have to make it back to camp before Luke and his army."
"We could just take a plane," Rachel said.
I shuddered. "I don't fly."
"But you just did."
"That was low flying," I said, "and even that's risky. Flying up really high, that's Zeus's territory. I can't do it. Besides, we don't even have time for a flight. The labyrinth is the quickest way back." I didn't want to say it, but I was also hoping that maybe, just maybe, we would find Grover and Tyson along the way.
"So we need a car to take us into the city," Annabeth said.
Rachel looked down into the parking lot. She grimaced, as if she were about to do something she regretted.
"I'll take care of it."
"How?"
Annabeth asked.
"Just trust me."
Annabeth looked uneasy, but she nodded.
"Okay, I'm going to buy a prism in the gift shop, try to make a rainbow, and send an iris message to camp."
"I'll go with you," Nico said. "I'm hungry."
"I'll stick with Rachel then," I said. "Meet you guys in the parking lot." Rachel frowned like she didn't want me with her. That made me feel kind of bad, but I followed her down to the parking lot anyway. She headed toward a big black car parked at the edge of the lot. It was a chauffeured Lexus, like the kind I always saw driving around Manhattan. The driver was out front, reading a newspaper. He wore a dark suit and tie.
"What are you going to do?" I asked Rachel.
"Just wait here," she said miserably.
please?
Rachel marched straight up to the driver and talked to him. He frowned. Rachel said something else. He turned pale and hastily folded up his magazine. He nodded and fumbled for his cell phone. After a brief call, he opened the back door of the car for Rachel to get in. She pointed back in my direction, and the driver bobbed his head some more, like, "Yes, ma'am, whatever you want." I couldn't figure out why he was acting so flustered. Rachel came back to get me just as Nico and Annabeth appeared from the gift shop.
"I talked to Kyron," Annabeth said. "They're doing their best to prepare for battle, but he still wants us back. They're going to need every hero they can get. Did we find a ride?"
"The driver's ready when we are," Rachel said. The chauffeur was now talking to another guy in khakis and a polo shirt, probably his client who'd rented the car. The client was complaining, but I could hear the driver saying,
"I'm sorry, sir. Emergency. I've ordered another car for you."
"Come on," Rachel said. She led us to the car and got in without even looking at the flustered guy who'd rented it. A minute later, we were cruising down the road. The seats were leather. There was plenty of legroom. The back seat had flat panel TVs built into the headrests and a mini fridge stocked with bottled water, sodas, and snacks. We started pigging out.
"Where to, Miss Dare?"
the driver asked.
"I'm not sure yet, Robert," she said. "We just need to drive through town and look around."
"Whatever you say, miss."
I looked at Rachel. "Do you know this guy?"
"No."
"But he dropped everything to help you. Why?"
"Just keep your eyes peeled," she said. "Help me look."
Which didn't exactly answer my question. We drove through Colorado Springs for about half an hour and saw nothing that Rachel considered a possible labyrinth entrance. I was very aware of Rachel's shoulder pressing against mine. I kept wondering who she was exactly and how she could walk up to some random chauffeur and immediately get a ride. After about an hour, we decided to head north toward Denver, thinking that maybe a bigger city would be more likely to have a labyrinth entrance, but we were all getting nervous. We were losing time. Then, right as we were leaving Colorado Springs, Rachel sat bolt upright.
"Get off the highway!"
The driver glanced back.
"Miss?"
"I saw something, I think. Get off here!"
The driver swerved across traffic and took the exit.
"What did you see?"
I asked, because we were pretty much out of the city now. There wasn't anything around except hills, grassland, and some scattered farm buildings. Rachel had the driver turn down this unpromising dirt road. We drove by a sign too fast for me to read it, but Rachel said,
"Western Museum of Mining and Industry."
For a museum, it didn't look like much. A little house like an old-fashioned railroad station. Some drills and pumps and old steam shovels on display outside.
"There."
Rachel pointed to a hole in the side of a nearby hill, a tunnel that was boarded up and chained.
"An old mine entrance."
"A door to the labyrinth?" Annabeth asked.
"How can you be sure?"
"Well, look at it," Rachel said.
"I mean, I can see it, okay?"
She thanked the driver, and we all got out. He didn't ask for money or anything.
"Are you sure you'll be all right, Miss Dare? I'd be happy to call your..."
"No,"
Rachel said.
"No, really. Thanks, Robert, but we're fine."
The museum seemed to be closed, so nobody bothered us as we climbed the hill to the mine shaft. When we got to the entrance, I saw the mark of Daedalus engraved on the padlock. Though how Rachel had seen something so tiny all the way from the highway, I had no idea. I touched the padlock, and the chains fell away. We kicked down a few boards and walked inside. For better or worse, we were back in the labyrinth. The dirt tunnels turned to stone. They wound around and split off and basically tried to confuse us, but Rachel had no trouble guiding us. We told her we needed to get back to New York, and she hardly even paused when the tunnels offered a choice. To my surprise, Rachel and Annabeth started up a conversation as we walked. Annabeth asked her more about her background, but Rachel was evasive, so they started talking about architecture. It turned out that Rachel knew something about it from studying art. They talked about different facades on buildings around New York. Have you seen this one? Blah, blah, blah. So I hung back and walked next to Nico in uncomfortable silence. Thanks for coming after us, I told him at last. Nico's eyes narrowed. He didn't seem as angry as he used to. Just suspicious, careful. I owed you for the ranch, Percy. Plus, I wanted to see Daedalus for myself. Minos was right, in a way. Daedalus should die. Nobody should be able to avoid death that long. It's not natural. That's what you were after all along, I said, trading Daedalus's soul for your sister's. Nico walked for another 50 yards before answering. It hasn't been easy, you know, having only the dead for company, knowing that I'll never be accepted by the living. Only the dead respect me, and they only do that out of fear. You could be accepted, I said. You could have friends at camp. He stared at me. Do you really believe that, Percy? I didn't answer. The truth was, I didn't know. Nico had always been a little different, but since Bianca's death, he'd gotten almost scary. He had his father's eyes, that intense, manic fire that made you suspect he was either a genius or a madman. And the way he'd banished Minos and called himself the King of Ghosts, it was kind of impressive, but it made me uncomfortable, too. Before I could figure out what to tell him, I ran into Rachel, who'd stopped in front of me. We'd come to a crossroads. The tunnel continued straight ahead, but a side tunnel teed off to the right, a circular shaft carved from black volcanic rock. What is it? I asked. Rachel stared down the dark tunnel. In the dim flashlight beam, her face looked like one of Nico's specters. Is that the way? Annabeth asked. No, Rachel said nervously. Not at all. Why are we stopping then? I asked. Listen, Nico said. I heard wind coming down the tunnel, as if the exit were close, and I smelled something vaguely familiar, something that brought back bad memories. Eucalyptus trees, I said, like in California. Last winter, when we'd faced Luke and the Titan Atlas on the top of Mount Tamalpais, the air had smelled just like that. There's something evil down that tunnel, Rachel said. Something very powerful. And the smell of death, Nico added, which made me feel a whole lot better. Annabeth and I exchanged glances. Luke's entrance, she guessed. The one to Mount Othrys, the Titan's palace. I have to check it out, I said. Percy, no. Luke could be right there, I said. Or Kronos. I have to find out what's going on. Annabeth hesitated. Then we'll all go. No, I said. It's too dangerous. If they got hold of Nico, or Rachel for that matter, Kronos could use them. You stay here and guard them. What I didn't say, I was also worried about Annabeth. I didn't trust what she would do if she saw Luke again. He had fooled her and manipulated her too many times before. Percy, don't, Rachel said. Don't go up there alone. I'll be quick, I promised. I won't do anything stupid. Annabeth took her Yankees cap out of her pocket. At least take this, and be careful. Thanks. I remembered the last time Annabeth and I had parted ways, when she'd given me a kiss for luck in Mount St. Helens. This time, all I got was the hat. I put it on. Here goes nothing. And I sneaked invisibly down the dark stone tunnel. Before I even got to the exit, I heard voices, the growling, barking sounds of sea demon smiths, the Telekines.
At least we salvaged the blade, one said. The master will reward us.
Yes, yes, a second shrieked.
Rewards beyond measure.
Another voice, this one more human, said,
yeah, well, that's great. Now, if you're done with me...
No, Half-Blood, the Telekine said. You must help us make the presentation. It's a great honor.
Gee, thanks, the Half-Blood said, and I realized
It was Ethan Nakamura, the guy who'd run away after I'd saved his sorry life in the arena. I crept toward the end of the tunnel. I had to remind myself I was invisible. They shouldn't be able to see me. A blast of cold air hit me as I emerged. I was standing near the top of Mount Tam. The Pacific Ocean spread out below, gray under a cloudy sky. About 20 feet downhill, two telekines were placing something on a big rock. Something long and thin and wrapped in black cloth. Ethan was helping them open it.
"Careful, fool," the telekine scolded. "One touch and the blade will sever your soul from your body."
Ethan swallowed nervously.
"Maybe I let you unwrap it then."
I glanced up at the mountain's peak, where a black marble fortress loomed, just like I'd seen in my dreams. It reminded me of an oversized mausoleum, with walls 50 feet high. I had no idea how mortals could miss the fact that it was here, but then again, everything below the summit seemed fuzzy to me, as if there were a thick veil between me and the lower half of the mountain. There was magic going on here, really powerful mist. Above me, the sky swirled into a huge funnel cloud. I couldn't see Atlas, but I could hear him groaning in the distance, still laboring under the weight of the sky, just beyond the fortress.
"There!"
the telekine said. Reverently, he lifted the weapon, and my blood turned to ice. It was a scythe, a 6-foot-long blade curved like a crescent moon with a wooden handle wrapped in leather. The blade glinted 2 different colors, steel and bronze. It was the weapon of Kronos, the one he'd used to slice up his father, Uranus, before the gods had taken it away from him and cut Kronos to pieces, casting him into Tartarus. Now the weapon was reforged.
"We must sanctify it in blood," the telekine said. "Then you, half-blood, shall help present it when the Lord awakes."
I ran toward the fortress, my pulse pounding in my ears. I didn't want to get anywhere close to that horrible black mausoleum, but I knew what I had to do. I had to stop Kronos from rising. This might be my only chance. I dashed through a dark foyer and into the main hall. The floor shined like a mahogany piano, pure black and yet full of light. Black marble statues lined the walls. I didn't recognize the faces, but I knew I was looking at images of the titans who'd ruled before the gods. At the end of the room, between 2 bronze braziers, was a dais. And on the dais, the golden sarcophagus. The room was silent, except for the cackle of the fires. Luke wasn't here. No guards. Nothing. It was too easy. But I approached the dais. The sarcophagus was just like I remembered. About 10 feet long, much too big for a human. It was carved with elaborate scenes of death and destruction, pictures of the gods being trodden under chariots, temples and famous world landmarks being smashed and burned. The whole coffin gave off an aura of extreme cold, like I was walking into a freezer. My breath began to steam. I drew Riptide and took a little comfort from the familiar weight of the sword in my hand. Whenever I'd approached Kronos before, his evil voice had spoken in my mind. Why was he silent now? He'd been shred into 1,000 pieces, cut with his own scythe. What would I find if I opened that lid? How could they make a new body for him? I had no answers. I just knew that if he was about to rise, I had to strike him down before he got his scythe. I had to figure out a way to stop him. I stood over the coffin. The lid was decorated even more intricately than the sides, with scenes of carnage and power. In the middle was an inscription carved in letters even older than Greek, a language of magic. I couldn't read it exactly, but I knew what it said. Kronos, Lord of Time. My hand touched the lid. My fingertips turned blue. Frost gathered on my sword. Then I heard noises behind me, voices approaching. It was now or never. I pushed back the golden lid, and it fell to the floor with a huge whoom. I lifted my sword, ready to strike, but when I looked inside, I didn't comprehend what I was seeing. Mortal legs, dressed in gray pants, a white T-shirt, hands folded over his stomach. One piece of his chest was missing, a clean black hole about the size of a bullet wound right where his heart should have been. His eyes were closed, his skin was pale, blonde hair, and a scar running along the left side of his face. The body in the coffin was Luke's. I should have stabbed him right then. I should have brought the point of Riptide down with all my strength. But I was too stunned. I didn't understand. As much as I hated Luke, as much as he betrayed me, I just didn't get why he was in the coffin, and why he looked so very, very dead. Then the voices of the telekines were right behind me.
What has happened?
One of the demons screamed when he saw the lid. I stumbled away from the dais, forgetting that I was invisible, and hid behind a column as they approached.
Careful, the other demon warned. Perhaps he stirs. We must present the gifts now, immediately.
The two telekines shuffled forward and knelt, holding up the scythe on its wrapping cloth.
My lord, one said, your symbol of power is remade.
Silence. Nothing happened in the coffin.
You fool, the other telekine muttered. He requires the half-blood first.
Ethan stepped back. Whoa, what do you mean he requires me?
Don't be a coward,
the first telekine hissed.
He does not require your death, only your allegiance. Pledge him your service. Renounce the gods. That is all.
No, I yelled. It was a stupid thing to do, but I charged into the room and took off the cap.
Ethan, don't! Trespasser!
The telekines bared their seal teeth.
The master will deal with you soon enough. Hurry, boy.
Ethan, I pleaded, don't listen to them. Help me destroy it. Ethan turned toward me, his eye patch blending in with the shadows on his face. His expression was something like pity. I told you not to spare me, Percy. An eye for an eye. You ever hear that saying? I learned what it means the hard way. When I discovered my godly parent, I'm the child of Nemesis, goddess of revenge, and this is what I was made to do. He turned toward the dais. I renounce the gods. What have they ever done for me? I will see them destroyed. I will serve Kronos. The building rumbled. A wisp of blue light rose from the floor at Ethan Nakamura's feet. It drifted toward the coffin and began to shimmer, like a cloud of pure energy. Then it descended into the sarcophagus. Luke sat bolt upright. His eyes opened, and they were no longer blue. They were golden, the same color as the coffin. The hole in his chest was gone. He was complete. He leaped out of the coffin with ease, and where his feet touched the floor, the marble froze like craters of ice. He looked at Ethan and the telekines with those horrible golden eyes as if he were a newborn baby, not sure what he was seeing. Then he looked at me, and a smile of recognition crept across his mouth.
This body has been well prepared.
His voice was like a razor blade running over my skin. It was Luke's, but not Luke's. Underneath his voice was another, more horrible sound, an ancient, cold sound like metal scraping against rock.
Don't you think so, Percy Jackson?
I couldn't move. I couldn't answer. Kronos threw back his head and laughed. The scar on his face rippled.
Luke feared you, the Titan's voice said. His jealousy and hatred have been powerful tools. It has kept him obedient. For that, I thank you.
Ethan collapsed in terror. He covered his face with his hands. The telekines trembled, holding up the scythe. Finally, I found my nerve. I lunged at the thing that used to be Luke, thrusting my blade straight at his chest. But his skin deflected the blow like he was made of pure steel. He looked at me with amusement. Then he flicked his hand, and I flew across the room. I slammed against a pillar. I struggled to my feet, blinking the stars out of my eyes. But Kronos had already grasped the handle of his scythe.
"Ah, much better," he said. "Backbiter," Luke called it. "Inappropriate name. Now that it is reforged completely, it shall indeed bite back."
"What have you done to Luke?" I groaned. Kronos raised his scythe.
"He serves me with his whole being, as I require. The difference is, he feared you, Percy Jackson. I do not."
That's when I ran. There wasn't even any thought to it. No debate in my mind about, gee, should I stand up to him and try to fight again? Nope. I simply ran. But my feet felt like lead. Time slowed down around me, like the world was turning to jello. I had this feeling once before, and I knew it was the power of Kronos. His presence was so strong it could bend time itself.
"Run, little hero," he laughed. "Run."
I glanced back and saw him approaching leisurely, swinging his scythe as if he were enjoying the feel of having it in his hands again. No weapon in the world could stop him. No amount of celestial bronze. He was 10 feet away when I heard,
"Percy!"
Rachel's voice. Something flew past me, and a blue plastic hairbrush hit Kronos in the eye.
"Ow!"
he yelled. For a moment, it was only Luke's voice, full of surprise and pain. My limbs were freed, and I ran straight into Rachel, Nico, and Annabeth, who were standing in the entry hall, their eyes wide with dismay.
"Luke?" Annabeth called. "What?"
I grabbed her by the shirt and hauled her after me. I ran as fast as I have ever run, straight out of the fortress. We were almost back to the labyrinth entrance when I heard the loudest bellow in the world, the voice of Kronos coming back into control.
"After them!"
"No!"
Nico yelled. He clapped his hands together, and a jagged spire of rock the size of an 18-wheeler erupted from the ground right in front of the fortress. The tremor it caused was so powerful the front columns of the building came crashing down. I heard muffled screams from the telekines inside. Dust billowed everywhere. We plunged into the labyrinth and kept running, the howl of the Titan Lord shaking the entire world behind us. Chapter 17. The Lost God Speaks. We ran until we were exhausted. Rachel steered us away from traps, but we had no destination in mind, only away from that dark mountain and the roar of Kronos. We stopped in a tunnel of wet white rock, like a part of a natural cave. I couldn't hear anything behind us, but I didn't feel any safer. I could still remember those unnatural golden eyes staring out of Luke's face and the feeling that my limbs were slowly turning to stone.
"I can't go any farther,"
Rachel gasped, hugging her chest. Annabeth had been crying the entire time we'd been running. Now she collapsed and put her head between her knees. Her sobs echoed in the tunnel. Nico and I sat next to each other. He dropped his sword next to mine and took a shaky breath.
"That sucked,"
he said, which I thought summed things up pretty well.
"You saved our lives," I said.
Nico wiped the dust off his face.
"Blame the girls for dragging me along. That's the only thing they could agree on. We needed to help you or you'd mess things up."
"Nice that they trust me so much." I shined my flashlight across the cavern.
Water dripped from the stalactites like a slow-motion rain.
Nico, you, kind of gave yourself away.
What do you mean?
That wall of black stone? That was pretty impressive. If Kronos didn't know who you were before, he does now. A child of the underworld.
Nico frowned. Big deal.
I let it drop. I figured he was just trying to hide how scared he was, and I couldn't blame him.
Annabeth lifted her head. Her eyes were red from crying.
What? What was wrong with Luke? What did they do to him?
I told her what I'd seen in the coffin, the way the last piece of Kronos' spirit had entered Luke's body when Ethan Nakamura pledged his service.
No, Annabeth said. That can't be true. He couldn't...
He gave himself over to Kronos, I said. I'm sorry, Annabeth, but Luke is gone.
No, she insisted. You saw when Rachel hit him.
I nodded, looking at Rachel with respect. You hit the Lord of the Titans in the eye with a blue plastic hairbrush. Rachel looked embarrassed.
It was the only thing I had.
But you saw, Annabeth insisted. When it hit him, just for a second, he was dazed. He came back to his senses.
So maybe Kronos wasn't completely settled in the body, or whatever, I said. It doesn't mean Luke was in control.
You want him to be evil, is that it? Annabeth yelled.
You didn't know him before, Percy. I did.
What is it with you? I snapped. Why do you keep defending him?
Whoa, you two, Rachel said. Knock it off.
Annabeth turned on her.
Stay out of it, mortal girl. If it wasn't for you...
Whatever she was going to say, her voice broke. She put her head down again and sobbed miserably. I wanted to comfort her, but I didn't know how. I still felt stunned, like Kronos' time-slow effect had affected my brain. I just couldn't comprehend what I'd seen. Kronos was alive. He was armed. And the end of the world was probably close at hand.
We have to keep moving, Nico said. He'll send monsters after us.
Nobody was in any shape to run, but Nico was right. I hauled myself up and helped Rachel to her feet.
You did good back there, I told her.
She managed a weak smile.
Yeah, well, I didn't want you to die.
She blushed.
I mean, just because, you know, you owe me too many favors. How am I going to collect if you die?
I knelt next to Annabeth. Hey, I'm sorry. We need to move.
I know, she said. I'm all right.
She was clearly not all right, but she got to her feet, and we started straggling through the labyrinth again.
Back to New York, I said. Rachel, can you...
I froze. A few feet in front of us, my flashlight beam fixed on a trampled clump of red fabric lying on the ground. It was a Rasta cap, the one Grover always wore. My hand shook as I picked up the cap. It looked like it had been stepped on by a huge muddy boot. After all that I'd gone through today, I couldn't stand the thought that something might have happened to Grover, too. Then I noticed something else. The cave floor was mushy and wet from the water dripping off the stalactites. There were large footprints like Tyson's and smaller ones, goat hooves, leading off to the left.
We have to follow them, I said. They went that way. It must have been recently.
What about Camp Half-Blood? Nico said. There's no time.
We have to find them, Annabeth insisted. They're our friends.
She picked up Grover's smashed cap and forged ahead. I followed, bracing myself for the worst. The tunnel was treacherous. It sloped at weird angles and was slimy with moisture. Half the time we were slipping and sliding rather than walking. Finally, we got to the bottom of a slope and found ourselves in a large cave with huge stalagmite columns. Through the center of the room ran an underground river, and Tyson was sitting by the banks, cradling Grover in his lap. Grover's eyes were closed. He wasn't moving.
Tyson! I yelled.
Percy! Come quick!
We ran over to him. Grover wasn't dead, thank the gods, but his whole body trembled like he was freezing to death. "What happened?" I asked.
"So many things," Tyson murmured.